Welcome, everybody. This is Ms. Parker, and I appreciate you showing up this evening. It's kind of a last minute thing. I wasn't really sure if I was going to get this done in time. And then about 30 minutes ago, I was like, yeah, I got it. Okay, let's start. So I need to read a disclaimer at the beginning of this. The material and information contained or given on this website or audio file is for general information only. All parties on this channel are not lawyers or financial advisors. You are using the information with your own discretion. You should not rely on the material or information on this website or audio file as a basis for making any business decisions. While I do endeavor to keep the information as up to date and correct as possible, RV Project Help makes no representations or warranties of any kind, expressed or implied, about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability, this never ends, with respect to the podcast or the audio cast or the audio files or the website or the information, product, services, or related graphics contained on this website or audio file for any purpose. All due diligence is the responsibility of the participant. I think I start screwing that thing up about halfway every single time. Hey, Meg, glad to see you. So, I need to get some things off my chest. I'm really, really, really been hopeful that tomorrow things would start to move. And my friend had said that it would. But the other thing she said is that we were looking for currency to be announced in Iraq, and that hasn't happened. So, oh man, it's like this tenterhooks waiting and waiting and waiting. So I don't know. I'm down to 50-50 to see what happens tomorrow, but I still got my hope up. So far I've been wrong 100% of the way about the dates and every time I do one of these decodes. But hey, I've been wrong 100% of the time. My friends is for the first time, so let's see how it goes. I'm still hoping for it to go tomorrow. This topic that I'm going to talk about tonight is kind of ironic. We have been talking about getting mentors, and I did a audio file about how to get a mentor and what to look for in a mentor, which is really, really important. What to look for is as much or more important than anything else. But the thing, I have a mentor. I have had a mentor for about 20 years. And I swear that some days he literally puts his head in his hands and says, why God, why did I do this? Because I try very hard. I do. I try very hard. But sometimes I'm just a redhead. And sometimes it takes a long time to learn a lesson, okay? And sometimes, even though I try really, 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 really hard, sometimes I still suck greatly. So while I've been wanting to do this for you guys, there's part of me that says, you're a freaking hypocrite because you don't do half of this shit. And your mentor is up your ass every single time he talks to you to get you to do this shit. So it's like, part of me is hoping, well, okay, well, if I do this chat, maybe I'll get better at the things I suck at. So, I don't know if that makes sense, but, I do know my shortcomings, and I do know that there are things on this list that he constantly tells me that I suck at and that I need to do better at. And sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. So today I thought, well, you know, I got a lot of notes. I've written some stuff about this topic. And doesn't matter, I still suck. So Good luck to all of you listening to me. So there are some things that you can do to make your life much easier as a CEO or as someone running a humanitarian project. And you're going to hear me go back and forth from using the term business to humanitarian project. And that's strictly out of habit, because all I did for years was just business, not humanitarian projects. But they're basically like pretty much a lot alike. Hi, somebody. Okay, we got it. So I'm probably going to laugh a lot through this one because I'm embarrassed. Because sometimes I'm not as good as I need to be. And yeah. But hey, I know my faults. And sometimes they're pretty massive. So some of these things I do really, really, really well. And I'll be glad to tell you the ones I do really, really, really well. And others I super suck at, and I'll be glad to tell you ones I suck at, but I'm pretty sure you're already going to figure them out as soon as I tell you what each one is. One of the things I've done throughout the years and through different companies I've worked with or ones I've actually run, I always try to go to, see, the shitty thing about what I'm telling you is when I start talking to you about stuff, I remember other stuff that you don't know. So I'm going to kind of go backwards sometimes. Okay. So when you get newly rich, okay, and you start hanging around other people that have businesses and this and that, okay, you are their entertainment because they know you're going to screw up badly. Okay, so my goal is for you to not screw up, okay, and to get as much information under your feet so you can hit the gate running, so you don't have any little falters or any little wiggles, you know, you got it going on, okay. So there are things that they've beaten into your heads about how you have to go to college, how you have to have this, how you have to have that. And if you don't have it, you can't get there. That's not true. When I've gone to meet other events, I always read, never stop learning, always read, always, no matter what, no matter how much money you have. In fact, the more money you have, the more you need to read. Because you always need to educate yourself, always. That's one of the key big things about success, okay? The next thing you need to know is that you have to take risk, okay? Everybody does. Everybody that I see that screws up in business when they first get their first company, they color inside the lines. They are so fucking scared to color outside the lines. It's like you can breathe their fear, okay? Don't do that. You have to start listening to your heart. Like I say this about being brainwashed, you know, your brain is telling you, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do that. So your heart is screaming, yes, I can, just give me a chance. You know, it's like, put me in, coach. There's more truth to that than there is humor. Because if you believe you can, you can. And nobody can tell you different. Because there's ways to do everything, even if you can't do anything. Okay? And people go, oh, that's not true. Well, a great example of this is the guy who played Superman, who became a paraplegic from the neck down. He still ran companies, even though he didn't have arms, legs, a body that would work. He had a brain. And because he believed he could do it, he did. You guys have all your arms, all your legs, everything, you know. All you have to have is the belief that you can do it. There is a solution for every single problem that you can come up with. We could play a game of throw Parker a problem, and I could tell you how to fix it. And the reason why is I've had example after example after example, people just screwing themselves because they would not take a risk. Every single one of you are risk takers. That's already a given, because you wouldn't be sitting here wanting to write a document about currency and how to do a humanitarian project when everybody in your intimate circle is laughing their ass off at you. You are risk takers. You have to be a risk taker to run a big organization or to have a humanitarian project. For those of you that are thinking, oh, I'm too old, I'm too this, I'm too that, shut up. You're not. You're here at the right time at the right place, and you are a risk taker. That's one of the biggest things about being a good executive, is that you have to look at the problem, look at each side equally, and figure out which is the best way. It's like sailing a ship through the storm. Storms to the left, storms to the right. You got to sail it right through the middle. If you start feeling it, feel your company, feel the pulse of the company, feel how your dream is going, and start working from there. Everybody that you need, your CEO, everybody, if you want to, here's one of the things is a lot of people think, well, I can't, you know, they're not going to let me do this because I'm not a CEO. When you go to your meeting, if you've never had experience as a CEO, what you do is you tell them this: I know I have no experience as a CEO, but that's okay, because my plan to solve that is I'm going to hire a CEO, and he will scaffold the information I already know to his knowledge of how to be a CEO, and his position will be to teach me how to be a better CEO, or how to be a CEO. And that way it solves my problem if I don't have enough knowledge, and how I gain knowledge. And at the same time, when he's done with that, he or she's done with that process, then now we have two CEOs, and then we'll be ready to open a third office or location. And then we just have to train one more CEO. So by acknowledging that you don't have the knowledge and coming up with a solution before they ask you, do you have any experience? That shows calculated risk. Okay? That is calculated risk, because you know you can't do it, but you know you have, you know, fuck you money. So if you have that kind of money, you know you can hire anybody. Well, who would you hire? You would hire a direct mentor or a direct teacher, someone with an RV, a CV, a resume that is what you want to be as a CEO. When you're looking at this guy or this gal's resume, read the resume and take it to heart. See, you know, see if you can get a feel for the person. Spend a day on an interview. Take him to Putt-Putt Golf or her to Putt-Putt Golf. And just talk to this person, because the person that you hire as your CEO, what you're hiring is someone that you want to teach you how to do what they do. So be careful with who you hire, but make sure it's somebody that resonates with you, so that they, when you see how they have run their companies, that's what you want to do in yours. So any successful CEO is going to, they're never going to play by the rules. Anybody that's been really successful, they've always had some kind of crazy break. I think that our quote crazy break is that we have decided to become humanitarians. We put our money where our mouth is. We bought currency, and we're ready to start this journey. So that's one of the big tickets. And everybody in here who's listening to this, if you've got a project, you're working on the RV, you are a risk taker. So way to go, number one. This is me. I do take risks. I take major risks. I did a really bad one once, but that's all it was once. Now, the next thing you want to do is you want to include everybody. Now, I am beyond not PC. I don't give a shit what race you are, what color you are. I don't give a crap if I'm told I have to hire this many people of this race or that. I don't care about none of that shit. All I care about is that the people that I hire can do the job they're hired for. That's important. I try to make sure different ways of thinking are included. Because it can't be just race or gender. It has to be the way people think. So you want to have people, all different people. Because, and you, and I always have, oh God, I hate to admit this. Oh God. I always have one employee that I just really don't like at all. I just really don't like that person at all. However, I know that that person is an expert in their field. And that's why I have them there. Because you need people that see things from all different ways, all different ways of thinking. Race, gender, sexual orientation, political, sometimes that is part of the ways of people that think differently. So it kind of works, but I don't really follow it because what I care about is making sure different viewpoints are seen. It usually happens by accident that you cover all those boxes. Don't look to fill those boxes. Look to find the right people. And you'll see a lot of times different viewpoints come from different genders, race, all that other stuff. Just kind of happens by accident. Everybody matters. Everybody matters. I know every person's name in my company. Every person. I know the janitor. I know his wife. I know their kids. One of the first things I have my PA do is my personal assistant. She talks to my executive assistant. And I keep a running track of the people that work for me that are in my building. Outside my building, I know all the people that were service. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, if your people think you give a shit, they are going to literally walk through fire to do whatever you need for your company. And when you see that response in people, it inspires you to be a better CEO. And the reason why that does it is kind of weird. I really think that when I feel that my company or my team likes where we're going, I feel like a real responsibility to be the best I can be. When I talk to other CEOs at, you know, when it's dinners of CEOs or different events, when it's just all the big bosses together, that's a theme that I hear over and over and over. The people that do the best are the ones that know every single person in their company. I have to use flashcards because I can't remember. So it'll take me 2 or 3 weeks to learn somebody new in the company. But I got it. Once I got it, whatever it takes for you to do to learn everybody in your company, do that. It makes a major difference. And it makes a difference in you. It makes you a better humanitarian because when we listen and we celebrate what's both common that we have together, and what's different, what we don't have together, we become wiser, we become more inclusive, and as an organization, the organization gets better as a whole. It's the most amazing feeling to feel the breath of your company, the breath of your organization. When everybody's on point, everybody's, you know, you've got a project, you've got something you're doing, and the company's humming. You can literally feel happiness coming out of your company. because people are happy with what they're doing. They're excited with what they're doing. They feel like what they do count. If you end up the kind of CEO where you know everybody's name in the place and you treat everybody with respect, that's what will happen in your company. So they will love you because you got to care and you can't fake it. You got to actually give a fuck. You have to really care. I will pick up a broom and sweep the employee lounge. I will pick up dirty plates and put them in the dishwasher. I do every single thing that I expect my employees to do. And if you have volunteers, it's even more important that the volunteers see what you do. Because you are the heart of the company. You are the heart of the business, the organization. So you have to lead from within. Be the best you can be. Really, be the best you can be. Be better than you think you are. And you will be the happiest person ever. Because I deeply miss working. I miss working so bad. Because it was so fun. Stressful, yeah, but so fun because we were knocking down barriers and stuff. It was great. You guys are going to go through that same thing. The barriers are mostly going to be you're thinking that you can't do this, but you can. So, I know they're going to have quotas and all that other crap. Find the best that you can find. Don't worry about everything else later. One of the things that I ended up ruining a really good company, and I did it because I was absolutely not approachable. Approachability is really key to being a good CEO. Really key. You have to have an open door policy, but it's not just an open door policy. You cannot be ego driven with what you're doing. You cannot look down on your staff. You have to think of yourself as being in the thick of things, being active. A member of the team, not on a high throne that you look down and tell everybody. If you do that high throne thing, you just create chaos in your business and in your organization. You want your staff to feel like, oh my God, that poodle.
I don't know why you decided to throw your bottle in the air right now. I really.
Mommy's talking. She's not talking to me, so I'm gonna throw my bone in the air. Crazy poodle. I'm very blunt. There's no PC in me whatsoever, and most of the time, my staff is scared to death to come talk to me. And I'm not ego driven. That's the problem. I'm not ego driven at all. I don't look down on my staff. They're all part of it. What happens is I'm so fucking abrupt. I'm just short and cranky, and that makes my staff afraid to talk to me. And I know that that's the problem. Oh my God, I can hear my mentor just talking to me right now. And I don't know how to fix it in me. And so the way I work around it, see, if I can't fix it, I figure out a way to work around it. If I can't fix it, I got to figure out a way to work around it. Hold on a minute, please. Just a second, please. I have to answer a text. Okay, sorry about that, guys. I had to take that. Because I know that most people are uncomfortable approaching me, what I do is I set myself up by failure by having my executive assistant handle that. She takes everybody to come, everybody, anyone, they'll go talk to her and they'll pitch whatever the issue is. And then she'll immediately, you know, she'll be calling me in or whatever. But that's how I had to work around this because, I'm too fucking blunt and I don't mean to be. I think Tom says I talk before I think. I don't think before I talk. I just instantly respond where I should take time to. You can just hear Tom right now. You need to think things over and not just immediately explode with your mouth. You need to think things over. I can't help it, Tom. I'm a redhead. I can't help. The situation is there and I say something. It never dawns on me to slow down. Yeah, can you tell? That's something I'm not good at. But I figured out a way to do it is I usually hire a very, 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 very personable executive assistant. And I let them know, hey, listen, I may sound like I'm angry. I may sound like I'm pissy. I may sound, you might think it's negative, but it's not. I'm just blunt. And I don't mean anything negative or bad at all. And once she and I get along like that, we're great. It's great. It's easy to go. So approachability is really important. One of the hardest things to do for a lot of people, this next thing I'm going to talk about is super easy for me to do. For other people, it's really, really hard. The thing is if you're down in the trenches and if you're working as a team member with your team, there's going to be a really weird thing that's going to happen. Someday, sometime, when you empower your employees, oh my God, when you empower your staff, when you empower your people that are working on your humanitarian projects, your business, your humanitarian projects, boom, they get really big, really fast. Because once people know that you'll put the juice behind them, if they can back up what they're saying, they'll take it to whole different levels. Okay. That's the good thing. And that's also the rough thing, because you have to be willing to change. You have to be willing to transform your ideas as long as the ideas meet the goals of what you're doing, okay? There have been times when I've had a plan, I was working the plan, everything's going along, and one of my employees says, hey, Park, if you do this instead, you'll jump up 5 steps faster instead of 2 steps or 1 step. And so when I was first running businesses, I wasn't willing to listen to shit. I don't listen to nobody. I'm a redhead. Are you kidding me? And then so I got older, I got wiser. And I thought, oh, you know, I might want to listen to this. And then I came the complete turnaround to I want to know what my people want. Because I have been very, very, very fortunate. I try to hire people that are better than me. I'm not afraid of hiring people that are replace me. I always try to hire people that are better than me, because people that are better than me, they come up with just as many ideas as I do. And that goes faster. Everything gets better faster with whatever you're trying to make or whatever you're trying to lift off the ground. Because when you're trying to start a new organization, a new company, any new the humanitarian company, the business, project, whatever word you want to use. Anytime you're starting a new one, new anything, it's like getting an air balloon to lift. You feel, you feel, you feel, you feel, you wiggle, wiggle. Is it ready yet? You feel, you feel, you feel, you wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. Is it ready yet? You feel, you feel. You can't tell when that balloon is ready to lift. But the more people that you have putting air into the balloon, the faster it goes up. So hire the very best that you can find in their fields, if you can, hire people that are better than you. But you have to be open-minded as a CEO to transform, to change your plans, because your team will at one time, one part, it may happen immediately, like the first couple of weeks, it may happen in months, but I guarantee you that this will happen. Is you're going to have somebody come to you that's in your organization and say, hey, let's do it this way. And they have to be not afraid to come talk to you, number one. And then you have to be open-minded enough to try it if it's possible. I've boosted companies way fast, way high, because I listened to somebody that was already working in the company before I got there. So that's a little different than doing your startups for your humanitarian projects. However, there's going to be some of you, because a couple of you like, hey, this is a cat rescue or this or that.
Did we lose you?
She could have gotten a call.
Yeah, she just fell off. Just hold on. I'm sure she'll be right back.
All good. She's worth the wait.
Phone died. She'll be right back on.
Sorry about that, guys. My phone died. I thought I had it plugged in, but it was not. Thanks for hanging in there. So, a lot of people that I have been talking to about their projects, they say, oh, I just want to have a little project, okay? But you, with the kind of funding that you guys are going to get, we're assuming, you guys are going to be under threat of competition locally, okay? And if you stay small, then you're basically letting other opportunities take the lion's share of your market. So if you're going to give away stuff in one town, and or you're going to do a project in one town, and you think, oh, this is all I want to get, don't do that. Once you get one done, cookie cutter, open another one, open another one, open another one. Sometimes what happens is when you open your second one, it's kind of slow. They both seem kind of slow. And then you open your third one, and some, you know, you're still breaking even, but it's like we don't have the magic point yet. And then your fourth, fifth, what happens is eventually you get a different type of a CEO, or you have a different kind of thing that somebody in the company tries and it works. And then as soon as that happens, you employ whatever you learn from that other satellite office or location, you apply it through all of your locations. And this is how you can impact a tremendous amount of people with your project, is by not sitting on your laurels. Be ready to transform yourself. Start another one. Keep going. You can do this. One of the things that I've been a mentor to a couple new CEOs, and I've stopped mentoring a couple of these people. And the one thing that you have to remember when you do this is you are the leader. You have to lead by example. You can't be showing up late to work. You can't be leaving early every day. I mean, once a week, maybe, okay. You can't be going out for 2-hour booze lunches, and you can't abuse your power as a CEO. you have to inspire the people that you work with to feel your dreams and to make this project, whatever it is doing, the best it can be. So, you know, I'm not saying that you get to work at like 4 a.m. or you leave at 10 at night. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying just have regular business hours or have your business hours. You know, if you've got kids, you're going to go to school, whatever, make your business hours 9 to 6, 9 to 5. Make your business hours, whatever the hours they are, and stick to them. Don't be moving them. If you are going to have business hours half a day, then have another single person in charge that everybody can go to. Do not have one or two people in different sections in charge. That's just a road to disaster. Okay. They just need to see that you're dedicated to your vision. And that's one of the best things you can show the people in your organization, that you're really dedicated. This is why I really, really, really encourage people, do not pick a project because you think, oh, it's going to be one that makes me a lot of money. Pick a project that's going to make your heart sing. Pick a project that when you think about it, you smile. Pick a project that you can't wait to get to the office when you get out of bed. And you'll never work another day of your life. It'll never feel like work. It'll feel like playing and you're getting paid for fucking off is what it feels like. And it feels so good to you, whatever it is that you picked, that you can't wait to do it. This is the reason why I have couples come to me and they go, oh, miss, he wants to do this project and she wants to do that project. And they're totally different. We can't make them work together. And I look at him and I go, it's not meant to work together. She has her project. You have your project. There's nothing that says you can't work in the same area because there's a lot of work that you're going to do that you're not going to be on site. There's nothing that says that you can't both have your own careers and come in the evening or, you know, switch back and forth locations to go have lunch or whatever you're going to do. You can make it work because when you get that feeling that this is the best freaking thing since sliced bread, you want that for your spouse. You want them to feel that same way. It's not fair. If there's something that's just burning for you to do and he didn't want to do it, don't do that. Or she don't want to do it, don't do that. Each of you can be your own powerhouse or vision maker or dream maker or humanitarian that you can be of your own right. It doesn't split you apart. It makes you stronger because you're wider. Make sense? Don't tell the other one, if it's two people, if you love your spouse, don't tell your spouse, oh, only do this because we can only do one project. No, there's nothing that says you only have to do one project. Nothing. This is the time for you to carve out your dreams and really dream and make it happen. This, you will be the vision of your project. Now, if the deep state says, or not the deep state, I've been talking about the deep state all day. If the alliance says, hey, you know, we don't really, you know, this your project's nice, but we don't really want to go through, you know, we're going to do something else. That doesn't mean that you can't do this with your own money. You can still do it. If you bought currency and you want to be a humanitarian, I think a lot of us are going to have enough funds that even if we don't, you know, even if that doesn't work, we can still pursue something that we really want. For instance, I have a friend of mine. I talk about him all the time. He he has something that he wants to do so bad that I just think it's silly. I think it's silly as fuck. Charming. So charming. That's so silly. His big dream is to have 4 ice cream trucks and go give away free ice cream to the little Hispanic kids in Miami Beach. He's Hispanic. He's from Puerto Rico. He wants to give away ice cream to all the poor little kids in Miami Beach. He knows these different areas. And I'm like, dude, you're like a major CEO. What do you really want to do? He goes, oh, I want to give ice cream away. And I'm like, no matter what I ask him, I've asked him different times, different places. I'm thinking, you know, seriously, dude, you don't realize I'm trying to give you your real dream. And all you keep telling me is, I want to give ice cream away. And then one day it hit me. It's like, why do I look down on the fact that that's what he believes is his big dream? That's his dream. So if I'm really going to help him, I'm not going to tell him, you know, that's stupid. Because to him, it's not stupid at all. It's something really important to him. And it's like, that project's only going to cost maybe $2 million, $3 million. In the big scheme of things, it's like nothing. But it doesn't matter. That's what's important to him. So I know that I've got a couple people listening right now that had asked me about, do I do a different project than my husband? And no. Both do what makes your heart sing. Because you both want to live in that abundance of feeling like you're not working. You're just living life large because you're nailing your dreams. That's the thing you should pick for your project. One of the things you're supposed to be as a CEO, the leader of a humanitarian project, is you're supposed to be the calm in the storm. You are, if you decide to run your company now. Some people are like, after listening to this, they're going, fuck, I don't want to be the CEO. That's like a big ass target on me. That's okay. You can still be completely in control. Here's how you do it. You hire a CEO and then you put together a board and you become the chairman of the board. Now you get to oversee everything the CEO does and you don't have to do jack shit. You just come up with the ideas. The CEO gives you information. And then you work with the CEO to implement your plans. Nobody's looking at you as a target. You're the one, you know, that is putting out the information. Now, it's hard because you still need to have some kind of interplay with the people that are working throughout your company. So make sure you know those people so that when you're going in and out of the building, if you see any of them, you can say hello to them by name. But if you don't want, you want this really, really badly, but it's like, hey, I worked my whole life. I am dead tired of working. I really want to retire. I mean, this sounds really good, but I really want to get my toes in the beach and I really fuck this work. I really want to do my project. Yeah, but I don't want to work that hard. So the solution is you hire a CEO. You hire a CEO, you become the board member, you get reports, you say to the CEO, hey, look, I need a report Monday, Wednesday, Friday, spend the last 30 minutes of your day just catching me up on what you did. And on Friday morning, we'll have a conference chat and we'll make sure we're going the right direction. You absolutely can run your company like that. I will be doing that. I'm going to start 9 projects. All 9 of my projects have to do with agriculture, except for my friend's ice cream truck. I still can't believe I'm fucking going to do that. Except for my friend's ice cream truck. All of them have to do with agriculture and agribusiness. So the only thing that I want to do
is I have two major inventions that I need to finish. And I want to be the head of R&D. I don't want to run the business. So I'm going to be the chairman of the board of the company. I'll have divisions, and each one of these different companies will be divisions. And I will have all of them will be run by CEOs, and I will meet with my CEOs Fridays. Friday will be just meetings with my CEOs. And then I have 6 days a week off to pursue whatever I want to do. So I want to do all the R&D. I want to finish all the R&D for my potting machine, for my harvesting machine. I've got like six machines I want to finish. So that's to me, that's not work. To me, that's like, I get to play and spend a lot of money and make cool shit. Yeah, I'm in. It's not like work at all. It's like just like, can't wait. It's like sheer joy. That's what you want to pick for yourself. Think about what you want to do. So as a CEO, you're supposed to be the calm one in the storm. I'm pretty calm. I used to own a catering company, and one night we were catering a dinner for 1,500 cattlemen. And it was a make or break it, because if we got bad reviews, these were all the guys that hired catering companies. So it was really, really important. These were all the people that hired catering companies. These were really high guys in the Western world. So 30 minutes before we were supposed to serve, we found out that the ovens were not working and we had no baked potatoes. So everybody was freaking out. I didn't freak out. I dumped all the coffee pots. We had these big 30-cup coffee pots. I dumped all the coffee pots and said, fill them with water, plug them in. I sent girls to the store, and I said, buy every container of instant mashed potatoes you can get. We made mashed potatoes in the coffee pots. We didn't miss a beat. We just said, hey, you know, the ovens didn't work. We had to go with mashed potatoes. We made stuffed mashed potatoes with the ribeye steaks. People just raved. 30 minutes, we could have destroyed ourselves. You have to be calm when things go to hell, because every single person is looking to you to lead them the hell out of that mess. This is the reason why I suggest, if you have never been a CEO, don't just try it on your own. You get a target on your back when you're a CEO. So hire a CEO to scaffold your education, scaffold your learning, scaffold your knowledge. That's a word the word scaffold, it's a funny word. It's very rarely used. But it's one of those things where like knows like. If you use that term, they know, oh, you're talking to somebody, or you're doing an education, or you're doing some real research. And you actually know the language of how it's talked about when you pair two people together so one learns from the other. The word is scaffold. So it's a weird word, but it gets you noticed because they realize you're using the correct terminology. I don't know. Sorry, just a little weird shit to tell you. But I'm pretty good. I'm pretty calm in a situation. The only thing I am not calm about whatsoever, not even a teeny tiny bit, is I have an irrational fear of mice. And I will be on my desk screaming, and I don't care who hears. I don't care. They need to kill the mouse right now. But that is, I have an irrational. I know they can't hurt me. I know they can't bite me. Don't care. I watched too many movies as a kid where the mice runs up your pant leg. I'm not having that. So I am not okay with mice. It's not okay. So that's the only time that I'm really not in charge. I lose my fucking mind because them, terrified of mice. But, you know, try to do everything you can if there's something that really pops your gourd like that to make sure it never, 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 never happens in front of your staff. Because you look like an idiot. I already know. It's really hard sometimes. It's been really hard. It's really funny because up until this whole thing and knowing everything was going on with Trump and knowing that these fuckers are trying to kill us and what they're doing to our kids, I was such an optimist. You're cranky about things, yeah, but I was, life is wonderful, you know. I was very optimistic. And being an optimist, it's, you're not born an optimist or pessimist, okay? Your friends and your family, they play a major role in the perceptions and what you start doing when you're really little. And the good thing about it is if you're a pessimist, you can physically change your mind, your brain, to becoming an optimist. And it's really funny because I've usually been an optimist, but recently all this rug pull that they've done with, it's going to happen this day and it doesn't, it's going to happen this day and it doesn't, it's made me so pessimistic. And it's just super hard if you're feeling really pessimistic to change your brain. But you have to work on it. It's really important as a CEO or someone leading a humanitarian project, because if you're sitting there thinking, I can't do this, or I don't want to do this, or this is not going to be good, or whatever, everybody in the project is going to feel it, and they're all going to shut down. You're leading them, okay? Even if you are working as a CEO, or excuse me, chairman of the board, and telling the CEO what to do, you're going to feel that up or down if it's just you and the CEO. So you have to be optimistic all the time, even if you don't feel it. Because if you keep doing it, you will feel it. It's hard. And it's funny because I've been very pessimistic. And as I was reading through these notes to talk about this, I was like, man, I forgot to be an optimist. I lost that. So it's really important as a CEO to be an optimist, because it's a skill you can learn even if you don't feel it. But it makes everybody else, it kind of rubs off, and it really helps it upbeat, cheer. It's good. It's very good. Some people argue with this. Some people think that being really transparent is a good thing. Some people think that it's not so good of a thing. But I believe lack of transparency is what has caused the corruption in society, what causes corruption in companies. And so I'm real transparent with all of my staff, all the managers, my upper management. And I make sure, sometimes it's hard though, I make sure that my staff is aware of what's going on before things go on, or before, you know, within very short time have I known, especially if it's bad news. We have, one of the things we do is we start making arrangements. We reach out to other companies to try to find as many jobs for our employees as we can if we're going to downsize. Because I network with people so strongly, it's often very easy to to find, quote, homes for your staff if you're going to be downsized for a while. It's no different than your employees giving you 2 weeks notice before they leave, so they're not leaving you in the lurch. You have to do the right thing and not leave them in the lurch, especially in this new world that we're going to be in, because we're going to have verbal contracts that we're going to be trained in. I was taught a little bit about it. Our conversations will be part of our contracts, where you'll have four stages, and two are in honor and two are in dishonor. And there are acceptance, conditional acceptance, argument, and silence. Argument and silence are dishonor, and the other two are honor. And so our conversations are going to be changed. That's some of the re-education that we're going to be doing. So knowing that this is coming, being transparent is going to be even more important for people to learn in the future, because, dishonesty dies in the dark, lives in the dark. I can't remember which way that goes. But if you're not telling people what's going on, you lose faith. Your people lose trust. Your customers lose trust. So you've got to have integrity and in transparency in what you're doing. I know that I've got a short temper, and when I was younger, I was pretty dramatic, and I let emotion show. You can't do that as someone who's running a project, or someone who is the CEO or chairman of the board. You have to be level, cool as a cucumber. Because I'm so animated, when I'm happy, I'm really animated. And I crack people up because I'm really animated. But so when I get really angry, I try to stay really cool. And people say, I know you're mad. You're talking in the same monotone. And I'm like, no, I'm just trying not to yell at you. But you have to have control of your emotions. And sometimes it's really, really, really hard. Especially if you have something really, really bad happen. I had one of my managers embezzle $80,000. And because it made the papers, everybody in the organization knew that this person had embezzled this much money. I was livid, just livid. And everybody that was working for me was scared, because they knew instantly with that amount of loss, would the company fold? So things could have been a lot worse, but you have to go in a situation that when things are bad, you have to square your shoulders. You have to talk to yourself, give yourself a pep talk before you go in there. And, you cannot lose your cool, no matter how mad you are. When I was younger, I really lost my cool, and I was mad for days and did bad things, but not anymore. Everybody's personalities are different, and everybody has personality flaws that don't really work well with business. So what you can do is you can struggle and try and, you know, have mistakes. But if you don't do things to change it or to seek change, you end up doing the same things and causing the same problems for yourself. So if you're going to do multiple humanitarian projects and you're having a problem when you start one, you got to start self-education to figure out whatever you're doing that is shooting yourself in the foot for the, so you don't do it again in the next one. So part of what happens when you start educating yourself about business, about your project or whatever you're doing, that helps you control your emotions so you don't get as shocked or surprised about things. You aim for regulation. You want to regulate how you feel, not repression. I was just repressed. I would just repress myself bad. And it was obvious. It wasn't obvious to me at the time because I thought I was doing great. I sucked, okay? But now I know it's regulation. You have to regulate and be mindful and don't just pop off. But that's hard to learn. And it's hard to remember, especially if you always, you know, if, especially if you've always been extremely blunt and don't care. Like, I was so black and white that if you break the rules, I don't care. You're gone. I don't care. I don't care. I don't want you here. You're gone. If you break the rules, I'm not dealing with you. You're gone. And I would be very, very pushy about it because I was usually upset, feelings hurt that they would do that because I trusted my, I put so much faith and trust in my staff that when they violated that trust and faith, I got very, very upset. You have to self-examine yourself as a CEO, as a leader of a humanitarian project. You have to self-examine yourself when you're doing this, when you're starting this, like once every 2 weeks, have a think. Sit down and think about how you handled stuff. Because that first few months of you becoming a humanitarian, it's going to be the most difficult thing you've ever done because you're going to be hit from all different sides. So get your feet underneath you. Start thinking of this kind of thing. Okay. So if you get, one of my friends, she gets so mad she'd cry. And then she'd cry more because she was mad. And then she'd just lose it. You know, one of the things she started working on was she wrote stuff down. If she knew she was going to be in a ticklish place, she had a pen and paper, she wrote stuff down. So it may be that you're feeling overwhelmed or you're frustrated because there's going to be meetings upon meetings upon meetings. And I remember feeling, I don't fucking care about any of this shit. I don't understand half this shit. I don't want to do any of it. But you can't just throw your hands up and be overwhelmed and walked out. I've seen that happen to people. And it's hard. Because later they're embarrassed. And it just takes a lot longer to get over it. And get back on the right track. So if you know that you have to control your emotion. And you know it's really serious. That you do control your emotion. Think about how you feel or what you do when you get angry. And how you can control that. Because the pressure that's going to be on you when you first do this is going to be extreme. And nobody tells you this shit. Nobody tells you this shit. You have to find out by yourself. So it's really important that you know this before you start this, because the more information, the more knowledge you can get about what it's like or what you can kind of expect, the better prepared you are to have your feet underneath you so you can fucking hit this thing running. I suck at controlled motion. I get really mad. I try not to. I'm doing better, but sometimes not so much. You have to, man, this is hard. One of the things you have to do is you have to be accountable for your actions. And when you're not doing things to put yourself in the best position you can be, you're not being accountable. So one of the reasons why I say that if you don't know how to be a CEO, if you've never done anything like this, if you've never run an organization, you need to hire a CEO to scaffold your education so you can learn how to run a company. Because now you're being accountable to anybody that says, you don't know what you're doing, you've never done this. You have to be aware of your shortcomings. And you don't pass the blame for failure. You take responsibility for whatever you are not following through or doing to do the best you can be. So don't give away your power. If you're going to hire a CEO to run your business, your humanitarian project, don't give away your power. Don't give your CEO all the power. He doesn't have all the power. It's yours. It's your vision. So you meet with that person and you do a meeting 2-3 times a week, and he has to be working with you to be accountable to you for what he's doing so that you can be accountable to the people that work for you and to the people that you serve and to the people that you're going to gift and celebrate with your gifts. You have to make sure, and this, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it, but if you're perceived as an incapable leader, your people will think you're incapable, and it'll lead to all kinds of other problems. So it's hard sometimes to know that you're not good at something, and sometimes it's really hard when you realize that people around you think you can't do your job. So it causes everybody else to get slack. It causes everybody else to care less. Not to be, you know, we could not care less, but I mean, they're not as on point as what they should be. So if they see you weak, and how they're going to see you weak is not committed to the project. If it's not something that they don't see rings in you, they're not going to want to do it as much as you want to do it. It's really funny. I'm deep into my project. I had this invention a few years ago. It's patented. I've already got one mold machine done, $65,000. And I've known about being accountable and being passionate about what I'm doing, but I never really talked about it to people that weren't in business. It was always something I talked to the agriculture people with. I never talked to total strangers about any of this stuff like I'm doing now. And it blows me away how many people don't believe that they cannot do this, but they don't know how to take the first step. So what they do, because they let the fear override the desire, they give away all their power. They let the CEO, they hire a CEO, and the CEO tells them what to do. And they, you know, they're like, how high do you want me to jump? So you have to believe that you're capable. You have to believe that your project is a good project. So if you have a mistake, you take accountability for it, and everybody sees it, and they respect you more. My mentor is, if you don't make a decision, you are still making a decision. Your decision is to not make a decision. That is a decision. You just made me so mad. You have to be decisive. You have to weigh each thing or each project or each, you know, option that comes in front of you. And this is why having your mission really clear, what your mission is. What are you going to do? Make sure you know what your mission is. I am going to get pots that grow vegetables and plants all over the world. So everything I vote yes or no on is, I ask myself, does this meet my mission? If I do this, will it get my pots to Venezuela faster? And if the answer is no, then I don't do it. If the answer is yes, yes, then I do it. And I don't care. And I don't go backwards. So to be that decisive is your mission has to be exactly what you want it to be. So once you figure out what your project is, what your humanitarian goal is, once you write that goal down, then it becomes easy. Then every time you get asked, hey, do we do this? Do we do that? What do we do, boss? Then you ask yourself, does this fill the mission? And if you say no to yourself, then don't do it. No matter if it's a good deal, no matter, oh, we'll leave this for later. Don't do none of that. Follow what you hear in your heart. Follow, does it fit the mission? Follow, does it fit the path of whatever humanitarian project I'm working on? Let everything else go to the side. Don't listen to no other static. Because as long as you're making a decision and deciding on what steps to make, you are deciding to go forward. If you decide, oh, I can't make a decision today, you're deciding not to do nothing. If you're deciding, I'm not going to make a decision about this for a week, I'm going to think about it, that means you're deciding to put everybody that's waiting for that on hold for a week. That's not good. And it doesn't lead to high morale. So be decisive. When you are doing meetings, this is going to sound like a hypocrite. I told you I was going to sound like a hypocrite. Here you go. You're supposed to be really brief. When you're having meetings with your staff, be as brief as possible. Get the idea out, you know, no word salad, no politically correctness. Hey, we're losing interest in this part of the business. Johnny said we should do this. We're going to try this week. Do you have any ideas about it? Just blunt, brief. Because they don't want to be in there for hours and hours listening to everybody else's ideas and bullshit. And you don't want to be listened to it either. So don't call meetings that waste your people's time. Hey, we're going to do the sound system in the building. Okay. You don't have to have the janitors there. You don't have to have you know, the secretaries there, because they're not interested in the sound system. Whoever is part of whatever that group is, that's the only people you have in the meeting. So be brief in your meetings once you step into the role of humanitarian, and only invite the people that need to be there. Don't invite people that don't need to be there, because it's just going to irritate them. I guess I've talked about this already, but I talk about you being passionate. There's also the people that work for you are passionate. If you haven't heard the audio about doing interviews, oh my God, the information that you get from interviews is so good for how to work with your employees, if you know how to use that information. But if you have someone sitting in front of you that you're looking at hiring, you've got two people looking at hiring. One person has a high passion for what you're doing, and the other person is very skilled, and you can see through their eyes that, yeah, this is a job I would like. Yeah, this would be good. I'd be a good fit. But they don't have the fire. Pick the person that has the fire. Always pick the person that has the fire. I've done this before too, and it's been the best advice is, I've had interviews with people that when they found out what we did, they were like, I just want to work here. I don't know if I match this job skill. I just want to work here. So if you've got someone that talks to you like that, you hire them and you figure out a job for them, because you can do a lot of things. You can teach people a lot of things, but you cannot make them passionate. That comes from within. So if you have interviews, don't close yourself off to hiring only the people when you're interviewing only the people that you're interviewing for, the job that you're interviewing for. Keep your mind open, because you may have someone come through to interview with you, and there you can just tell they want to do this, but you look at their resume, they're like, you don't qualify for this. Find another place for them, because that kind of passion will motivate a whole staff, will be the sugar boost, you know, the sugar high for the whole staff, for the whole project, you know. So find people with passion, passion over skills. Skills can be taught. Passion can't be taught. It's gotta come, gotta bubble up from inside. right now, you're gonna be going into your RVs, and you have a vision of what you wanna do. So, when a new company starts, that's the biggest thing, is to try to figure out with the people that are going to run in the show, what is their vision, okay? And then after you explain what you want to do, then you have to follow through. So it's great to go in there and pitch and to tell them your vision. But the next thing that's going to happen is we're going to be meeting with the teams. I don't know if it's a day or 2 days or 2 weeks, but we're going to be meeting with teams, and they're going to want to know, are you going to follow through? Have you actually sat down and thought about how you want to start this? Do you have things written down? Are you ready to go? Even if you don't know what you want to do, are you at least planning on, you know, reached out to headhunters to find a CEO to scaffold your education? You know, what is your follow through for what you said when you did the pitch? That follow through and vision is really important through every stage of what you're going to do, especially if there's some of you that have like your projects have different things, different pieces of them that are totally different, like a hemp girl who's making hemp concrete, she's going to make hemp piers, hemp reef, and hemp textiles, hemp shoes, you know, clothing. So all three of those, even though they have the same base product, they're all completely different. So, you know, what is your follow through for what you're going to talk about? Last thing, probably should be the first thing, is to diplomacy. You have to try to diffuse situations with tact and fairness. And this is the reason why this is last on my list, is this is the thing I'm the worst at. Not very diplomatic. I try to be. I don't have I don't have a lot of tact, and I don't really know how to get tact. But if you have a lot of tact, you can be very tactful. You can be fair. I don't ever want to look like I'm playing favorites. I don't ever want to feel like I'm playing favorites. I don't want to feel like I'm doing the wrong thing. Step properly.
Hello, this is John. I'm not a bot.
I'll check myself, and I'll ask someone who I admire, who I look up to for their advice, and because I know I'm not very tactful, I'll listen to that advice and try to take it under wing and do the best I can with it. Sometimes I fail. But these are the kind of things, these are the skills that people don't tell you that you have to have if you're gonna work. They don't talk to you about any of this shit. They just let you fall on your face. So my goal is to do these recordings because I want the new humanitarians to wildly succeed. I want them to be the best they can be and be ready for the curves that might come down their way. I didn't have anybody teaching me this shit. So I just want you to be the best humanitarians you can be and just be ready for whatever comes your way. So this is Ms. Parker. I'm with RV Project Help. And there's times I try to be brief, but I'm not. This is one of them. I hope you enjoyed listening to this audio. If there's anybody listening that has any questions, fire away.
May I have your email, please?
Okay. Heavenly Father, thank you for all the humanitarians that are about to be born very soon. Those that are afraid, not afraid to take on the gate. They're doing it anyway. God bless you, everyone, for listening. Amen.
Ms. Parker?
Ms. Parker? Ms. Parker.